Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 trade sales through Diamond 2 retailers for September 2018. Now, as always, this is what's reported by Diamond is selling into stores. They've obviously hung on to a few copies, so they've got something on the shelf by the time we walk in. This is not sales to end readers, but it is what publishers are using to determine what they keep publishing. We've got not only the top 300 that we use for month-to-month comparisons, but the actual top 500 this time around. Although, really, by the time you get down to the bottom of those, you're talking just a couple hundred units and such. Still, good to have that visibility. If we look at the breakdown of the top 300, Marvel has the lion's share of it with 28.7% of the total units, 38.11% of the total dollars at full retail price. Image is in second place with 27.14% of the units, but only 18.63% of the dollars. And then DC in third place with 22.99% of the units and 25.63% of the dollars. Mm-hmm. Now, that is a difference between Marvel and Image of only about 5,400 units or so. And if we look at Marvel, DC, and Image put together, they accounted for 78.82% of the trade sales for the top 300 and accounted for about 82.37% of the retail dollars at full retail price for those trade sales as well. So the other publishers, really a drop in the bucket compared to all of that. Mm-hmm. Again, not too surprising. It's just kind of the way it tends to shake out. If anything, it's a little surprising DC didn't have a little bit stronger trade sales and such. Historically, they tend to do a little bit better competing against Marvel in the trade area than on the monthly side, but not tons better, to be honest.
Yeah. One thing is interesting is I noticed from last month and then this month, it does look like there's a lot of reorder activity for Marvel. They're both over 50 items each of the last 2 months. And obviously with Image having just a smaller amount of material, they're generally going to have less reorders, although that's a big part of their business. DC obviously has a similarly large catalog, so you'd think that that would be a focus. But I almost wonder if when we actually look at the numbers and the retailer, the relative retail rank, I wonder if Marvel is continuing to, give huge discounts for certain aspects of stuff they want to get off their shelves of their warehouse.
I suspect we're going to see some retail rankings that are extraordinarily high mm-hmm. compared to, other things of the same price point.
Yeah. And I would think that maybe it's just another one of Marvel's, now it's one of their new consistent policies is that they give something a chance to sell. They print a certain amount number of copies and then they only allow the rest of that stuff to sit in the warehouse. And if it doesn't sell, in a certain amount of time, they start, doing 25% off, 50%, 75% off until it sells, even pennies on the dollar. And their strategy may be they print at such volumes with their printers because they have so many different things. They probably get good contracts that in order to keep their carrying costs down and everything else, at a certain point, it's just better to get the revenue from selling it, even if technically you're selling almost at cost or even a little bit below.
Absolutely. I think they've got a set amount of the print run that they're expecting to sell, and that's what's got to make the money. And as we get towards the end of the year, I think it makes sense to do some of those sales at that point, mm-hmm. get stuff out into the retail shelves where people can be picking it up as Christmas gifts or other holiday gifts and such. Mm-hmm. I think that's not a bad strategy at all. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you can sell stuff at full price, you make a little more off it, but you've also got to figure out where is that price break on the printing. And sometimes you're way better off printing another 1,000 units to really get that cost down mm-hmm. with the hope of either selling that over the long term or even just blowing it out at cost.
Yeah.
So see if there's anything else interesting on the breakdown, and really not much.
Yeah. No, I just think that could be one of their recurrent strategies is, I think that they've always been, they've, we've seen numerous reports that they have certain executives that are very interested in tightening costs, you know, cost control, you know, keeping things under control. And obviously they have a certain amount of warehouse space and they have a certain amount of product that they have to, you know, continue to put out since they published so many series. And I think that they probably have the system automated by now. You know, like I said, just after a certain amount of time, if you haven't sold it, you start getting blowout prices. And then obviously over time, the market reacts to that. And there are certain retailers that will wait for Marvel to put stuff on sale. And then they can either buy that at such a discount that it even though it may be longer to move it, when they do move it, it's quite profitable. Or to the con dealers and things like that, where you get the people selling, you know, 2-for-1 graphic novels or, you know, collected editions, where if you paid such a low price for it, it actually makes sense.
I've got to imagine that the Marvel library and backlist is a little harder to manage than the DC one, just because I think Marvel tends to flip over the titles more frequently. Mm-hmm. But also because right now Marvel is so much more active in movies and television shows that what is worth reprinting is a bit different than say on the DC side.
That's true.
Because really for DC, with the Titans show having started up, okay, there may be some interest in that. Black Lightning before that. But then you had Supergirl, you had Flash, you had Arrow. Those have been around for a good couple of years. Mm-hmm. Over on the Marvel side, over the last year or two, we've had Legion, we've had Cloak and Dagger, we've had Runaways. I think they've got 2 or 3 other ones coming out. So I think there's a lot more churn in what's relevant at any given point for Marvel than over at DC. And that's just on the TV side. On the movie side, obviously, Marvel's doing so much there that, you know, with the Captain Marvel movie coming up, the Black Panther movie having come out last year or this year, I think it definitely has got to be a little bit more to keep track of in terms of what should we reprint when on Marvel's side. And I think also as part of that, when they do the True Believers, they tend to do a pretty good job of theming that with either some months what's coming up in the comics, like the Return of Wolverine, and other months what's coming out in the movies, be it Deadpool, Black Panther, or whatever, and yeah, kind of coordinating that pretty well.
Yeah, no, I think I definitely see that trend when you look at your previews and you're like, wow, there's a lot of collected editions of this character coming out. And then you look at when that's supposed to like hit the shelves and then you go, oh yeah, and that's actually 2 weeks before the movie comes out. So that makes sense.
Yeah, it's a smart move. And I'm surprised and disappointed DC doesn't follow suit.
Yeah. Well, especially, you know, there's so much good material for a lot of the DC characters. And since they haven't done so, you know, a similar thing to what Marvel has, they can pick and choose from the best stuff possible at the beginning, you know?
Yeah. Well, and now with the DC app and stuff, an online service, if they were to do an episode of Legends of Tomorrow that focuses on a given character, like they've done with Jonah Hex or something like that, that'd be a good time to kind of highlight, hey, we've got some Jonah Hex comics online, or maybe do a reprint of a couple of them.
Yep.
So definite opportunities for kind of cross marketing and striking while the iron's hot and you've built some interest for some characters.
Mm-hmm.
If we take a look over at the top of the list, this time we've got some stuff selling much better than we've had in some past months. Specifically, we've got Saga Volume 9 selling at 21,058 units. We've had some months where that really would have blown the water, you know, out from what had been topping the list. This collects through the issue 54 where the series goes on hiatus. So we're probably not going to see Saga back on the list for another year and a half.
Yeah, probably a year and a half, considering, you know, the time to publish the individual issues and all that. It is interesting. This will be an interesting test of the market, because these sales show that there's striking demand. And I will say that I think the trend has definitely shown that Saga has become a very collected edition focused read in terms of where a lot of its fans are. There's, you know, you see a huge demand for the collected edition, and obviously they still have, you know, very solid single issue sales, but you know, that is a long time without publishing new material. And in a year, a lot can change in the industry and a lot can change people's taste in terms of, you know, like with so many series being published constantly and new things, people become very fickle. So it will be interesting to see if people come back in the same numbers.
Yeah. I think there's a duration during which if you break for too long, and I think it's over a year, you come back and the market is so different and the tastes are so different. it's hard to get back in there.
Yeah.
A year is about as long as I would even dream of taking a hiatus, and I do think it's risky.
Yeah. I have a quick question for you. Did they announce the hiatus in the letter pages of the book, or did they announce it on like an internet interview or something? Or I don't.
Both, I believe.
Both. Okay. Because one of my questions was wondering, are they taking time off because they generally need a break, or is Fiona going to be doing another project, or is it kind of to avoid burnout so they can keep going? Or
I think it's a little of all of the above.
Okay.
I think being able to do other projects is a good way for creators to kind of recharge their battery on a project, step away from it for a little bit. I don't know though. It's they've been going so long with this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not just the 54 issues. Factor in, you know, all the 3 month gaps or whatever they've had.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be interesting to see. I think this is going to come back without really missing a beat sales wise, but I don't think it's a guarantee.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, obviously it has the DAX stacked in its hand, in its direction in terms of will they be successful if they choose to come back? I was just more wondering what if she really gets into the next project she's doing? You know what I mean? Obviously, like for Brian Kane Vaughan being the writer, it's much easier for him to kind of like turn things on and off. At least in my opinion, I think for writers it is, because he's got other things like Paper Girls going, you know, so it's not like this is his only project. Whereas for the artist, you know, they generally have to work on one thing at a time. And so what if she really gets into that next project? You know, what if it becomes a passion project and then, you know, she just decides she doesn't want to come back? Obviously, I'm going to be completely honest here. They hit a home run with this, so she can work the rest of her career just on this and make enough money to never have to work a day in her life. Could you know the sales and things like this through Amazon? I mean, they make, you know, Walking Dead kind of money on this. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, but I think that's in its favor in terms of them coming back.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I'm just saying it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the best problem they could have is if they both wind up on other projects that are doing even better than Saga was, at which point I would expect them to find a way to get to a cadence where they could do some Saga, do some other stuff, do some Saga, do some other stuff.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
There are a number of properties where if they were to say, you know, hey, what, we're going to pause for a year and then we're going to come back, my response would be, come back to what?
Yeah.
You know, I don't think you're going to have an audience left at that point. Again, Saga not going to have that problem, probably. But we'll find out about a year from now when we're talking about, geez, how do we think this is going to do when it comes back?
Mm-hmm.
And that's if it comes back after a year. It could be a little more, could be a little less. Never know. So yeah, I'm curious on how all that does. Next item on the list, a little surprising it didn't do a little better, and it's Walking Dead Volume 30, New World Order trade paperback, 12,641 units. And it's comparing to, actually volume 3, which is kind of ridiculous. I'm not sure why it didn't hit 29 on that.
Well, probably, you know, that some weird algorithm thing where, you know how, when you're trying to do alphanumeric, ordering numbers, and sometimes if it's like not 030 and it just says 30, it, that's probably what it is.
I thought I had it to where it was doing it on an integer kind of a basis, but maybe it just couldn't find something. It's one of the few titles on the trade side where it can actually do a volume to volume comparison for any length.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's part of what's tripping it up. But I had thought, well, actually, I think I know what happened, is volume 29 seemed to have fallen through the cracks for the most part. That was the one where the first time we saw it, it did like 200 units, and then the next time it did like, you know, 18,000 or something.
Oh, like it got the way that they got calculated, yeah, we're split in months, but weirdly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's what tripped this up. Because, yeah, the last one did like 18,000 or something, so for this to do like 12,000, 13,000 is a little surprising.
And it is.
Came out at the beginning of the month, so it's not like it kind of, again, split months or something. But what I'm seeing is generally a little bit of a softening of sales of Walking Dead, as mm-hmm. I think should be expected for anything to go for 30 volumes of a trade.
Oh, absolutely.
Because people are going to jump on that first trade when they say, hey, I should read Walking Dead. Buy the first trade, 99. No brainer. Oh, I like it. I'll get the second. Get around to reading that. Then I'll read the third. Get around to reading that. Then get the fourth. Then eventually get around to reading that. And, you know, there's kind of that fall off of, you know, it's just a lot to read. you know, can, I think it does a better job than average of sustaining the interest for that, but you're going to pace out the purchasing of those next trades as you finish each one, and it's going to take a while to catch up to that 30th volume.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of this is reflecting the people that are getting it in trade, with some of them falling off because they've fallen a little behind on their reading.
That's true.
I don't think it's any sign of geez, we should panic or something for its sales, but there does come a point where I think it's gotten so much backstory that it becomes a little bit of an anchor to sales.
Oh, I completely agree with you. And it's funny because, you know, we talk about this being a little bit low for sales, but if you really think about the current modern environment, a volume 30 for a series making it to volume 30 is like the unicorn of unicorns. And then also 12,000 units in a month, considering what we talked about last month, you know, is like twice as, you know, 2.5 times better than the previous top of the month. So it still has a lot of legs and it still has a lot. And I almost wonder if you get to a point where it's almost like the soap opera thing where they've been going, you know, the soap operas were going for 30 or 40 years. And so obviously no one had time or the money to watch all of those. So you just kind of started wherever you came into it. And that's your quote unquote beginning of the series, you know?
Yeah, I think if we were seeing that, we would have seen higher sales on this.
No, I'm just saying going forward this is relatively in the market, probably the longest running series that people still care about. I know like Spawn and Savage Dragon technically are higher in single issues, but those are read by like 3,000 people. You know what I mean? Whereas Walking Dead is read by, when at least comparative to the comic culture, quite a few people.
Spawn's read by way more people than Savage Dragon, of course, but I take your point and I agree with it. And I would think that a few years ago when he had that jump forward in time, that would be a good starting point for some people as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's also going to be interesting to see how this does as the AMC show eventually winds down.
That is true.
Because I think it had strong legs before then, but I think that's brought a lot of people on board and has acted as a advertising venue for the comic. So, I mean, obviously 12,000 is doing, you know, light years better than the average thing on this list, but it is, for Walking Dead, not as good as it had been at one point.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, it easily would have done, I think, twice those numbers, if not even higher. So it's definitely a relative scale.
Yep.
And then the third item on the list is that Monstrous Volume 3, 9,199 units, so literally just a unit shy of 9,200. Hard to go wrong with that. That's, again, strong stuff. And then the next item on the list is yet another Image title. It's Oblivion Song, trade paperback, 5,882 units. So really the top four items are all Image books. That says something about where Marvel and DC are at, I think.
Absolutely. And you know, I will give the caveat that, you know, the top two are realistically the heavy hitters that for Image for Saga for the last few years and then for Walking Dead for years. But you're absolutely right. This is seeing this many at the top in the quantities. It's pretty impressive for Image.
Well, you would think with everything going on at Marvel and DC, there would be something that would be maybe not competing with like Saga or something, but I mean, the next item on the list is the Batman Catwoman The Wedding Album Deluxe Edition hardcover, 5,418 units. So it did well, but again, that was a fairly heavily hyped thing. How come we don't have a heavy hitter title without having some kind of sales stunt? How come we don't see something like that higher on the list?
Yeah, that is true. I mean, was there... Yeah, I you know, because nowadays with so many events and so many this and that, you would expect to see something like that at least on once a month for one of the two companies.
Yeah, I mean, just like Batman has been kind of an anchor sales thing for DC on the monthly side, you know, you could argue that this Batman Catwoman is collecting some of that and therefore taking that place, but it's collecting a couple of, I don't want to say random issues, but you know what I mean, assorted issues. By the time we get to Batman Prelude to the Wedding or whatever, that's down a good couple of items or whatever. And it's collecting, actually, that's collecting all the different one-shots. It's not even the regular Batman stuff. I guess I don't understand why they don't have a regular series that's getting collected and doing somewhere above the 3,000-4,000 range.
Uh-huh.
Because most of what I'm seeing here is either like the Justice League No Justice kind of thing, which was its own miniseries to reposition the Justice League, or Dark Knights 3, The Master Race, finally hitting trade paperback. We're not seeing, again, just a regular ongoing title having gotten collected to this point.
Hmm.
And I think it goes towards they're collecting too many of the regular titles. But as we talked about, you know, last month and stuff, they'd probably just be leaving money on the table if they didn't, so why shouldn't they?
That's a good point.
It just kills the incentive to go get the individual issues. There's no rush to go get it in trade because there's the theory it'll always be available, although I don't think that's necessarily as true anymore. And then by the time we hit the part of the list where we start seeing, you know, Flash, X-Men Red, Detective Comics, Wonder Woman, Super Sons, stuff like that, we're still getting at least a copy or so per store on average, but it's not really lighting the charts on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And to a degree, nor would I expect it to for that many titles, but I would kind of like to see some more interest in the regular ongoing titles.
There's so many of them, though, John.
Yeah, but I don't expect it on all of them, but I expect it on a few of them.
You know, we talked about this last month, is that there's so much being put out that the tyranny of choice almost, you know, like there are studies in advertising about when people go to the grocery store and, you know, there's 400 different types of toothpaste and you get paralyzed by so many choices. There may be an aspect of that in the comics market right now. There's so many choices. So a lot of the sales get spread out and diluted to all these different titles, to the point at which where the total number for each individual one may not be enough to support it all. But Marvel and DC keep cramming those issues because they have big machines to support.
I agree with that up to a point. I think for a lot of stuff, it's just going to be, it's yet another comic, you know, not that big of a deal. But I would expect there to be those flagship titles, the high-profile creative teams, and the things that are just really capturing people's interest. And to have, for each publisher, one or two of those that are doing head and shoulders above the rest.
Mm-hmm.
And doing it without, here's our major epic event of the year, or here's this story stunt that we're doing that really won't matter 6 months from now, if that long. And really, I would say already with the Batrimony stuff of that wedding album at rank number 5, and then again, the Prelude to the Running at rank number 14, and then one or two other places, the moment is past. I don't think at this point, as we're looking at these sales numbers, people care about those stories anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely a fickleness in the readership that I think is at play. But I think with that fickleness comes the hot, shiny object. It's just a question of, does it stay hot and shiny enough to cash in on it in the trade side?
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know.
There's so much focus on what's next that the what's now tends to get lost, and I don't think that helps anything. But it's also, by the time they get around to collecting it, by the time we see it on the trade list, some of the stuff feels older than it is, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I completely agree. I mean, look at the Watchmen stuff. I mean, the way that's being published, I'd forgotten that series was still going on, let alone that it's not done yet, let alone that we haven't seen a version of the first, you know, or it's a 12-issue series. We're going to get 2 6-issue trades that then become a hardcover that then become an absolute, or, you know, that whole thing, you know.
Doomsday Clock is its own problem.
Yeah, right?
the clock is ticking so slowly on that. It's that sales-wise, it's doing okay, but story momentum-wise, for me, it is just doing poorly.
Well, on a slight positive note, is you can just, with all the other stuff you have to read, you can just let it pile up, so then you can just read 8 of the last 12 issues all at once, and then it'll be story momentum to the end, right?
I'm only one issue behind on that. I try to keep up on the optimistic hope that something will happen.
Mm-hmm.
But it hadn't happened yet. Whereas, like, we've got it rank 13 there, Star Wars Thrawn. I read the first issue of that, now I can read the rest. There are a lot of these where I, frankly, I could have just waited for the trade, but I like the single issues. That's just how I am. But it's surprising how much of the top of this list is either Image stuff, kind of splash in the pan, you know, wedding stuff, or miniseries, like, again, The Dark Knights 3, Justice League No Justice, Star Wars Thrawn, things of that ilk. Where, I mean, looking at this list, and part of it is just the cadence of trades as well. Almost nothing in the top dozen or so is going to be on the list next month.
Yep.
You know, and some of it won't ever be on the list again as such, because, I mean, No Justice, well, that was a 4-issue limited series. It's over. It's done. Maybe Justice League will show back up, but frankly, I kind of doubt that.
You know, that whole line of thinking brings up this idea to me of, like, why I think the future will eventually become the Marvel Unlimited app and the DC version of it, because there's so much material and so much of it is inconsequential. You know, well, one man's trash is another man's treasure. So you could say, oh, that's not inconsequential to me. But for a large part about who's reading it, who's buying it, you know, people speak with their money. And if no one's buying it, then it by definition is almost inconsequential. At least it relates to the mass market. I mean, sometimes 10 years from now, someone will go back and find it, the quote unquote, this was a gem that no one understood. But for the most part, so much of this material just flies by. It almost becomes one of the best things about Marvel Unlimited for me is if I skipped a series because it didn't look interesting to me, but then later on, like 6 months to a year later, I hear good reviews or good buzz about it, I can go back on Marvel Unlimited and quickly find it and read it at my own leisure. And if I like it, I keep reading it. If I find that I don't like it, I just delete it and move on, you know?
Well, I think certainly there is a bit more of a meritocracy with this subscription service than with a kind of purchase as you go. And as things become relevant, I mean, I had some coworkers that were reading Civil War when the Captain America Civil War movie came out, and because of that movie, it's like, uh-huh. Oh, I enjoyed the movie. I want to see how the story originally was done in the comics. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as different things become relevant, oh, they've got this Cloak and Dagger show. I'll go read that. It certainly facilitates that kind of indulgence and interest. Whereas if you've got to wait for them to collect the thing, go find the collection, go buy the collection, there's a bit more of a time delay in all of that. And by the time you get the collection, you may not be as excited to go read it as you were when you were thinking initially, hey, I should go get that.
Absolutely. Well,
I mean, I've had a number of things that by the time they show up in my shipment from Cowabunga, I'm like, I was excited about this and I don't remember why.
Well, and I'm going to be honest, with the amount of material you get, do you ever open one of your boxes and go, I don't remember ordering this, but then you see it on the order sheet and you go, oh, I guess I did.
Yes, I do.
Well, see, you're at least willing to admit it. If I might be a little afraid to admit that, but you're good on you.
My memory's not what it once was. I'm actually sitting in possession of a Blu-ray that I need to go return because I already had a copy.
Oh, geez. Yeah, no, you know what's funny? I've done that too. Is I've excitedly saw something for sale on Amazon, or I was at the local comic book store and they had a sale, and I'm like, oh, I've been meaning to read this for years. And then I'll get it, I'll buy it, I'll take it home, and I'll you know, sit down to read it, and I'll wander over to my shelf and find that it's sitting there on my shelf in
yep.
the two red piles. I'm like, oh my God.
This is where it pays to have organized shelves and to file stuff to where as you bought it, and oh crap, it's right there. You know, you can go find the other copy.
Yeah. Or sometimes even more funny is I'll have something on my shelf and I'm like, oh, I want to read that now. I've been meaning to read that for a while. And I'll pull it off. I'll read it. And I'll be like, oh, that's great. And one of the places I keep track of where I read is on Goodreads because mm-hmm. It's really convenient with Goodreads. They're tied into Amazon and everything's by ISBN. And in the collected edition world, that's a really easy way to organize things. And I'll type the ISBN in there to go put my, you know, review and to put it in my different categories. And it says, oh, you read this 2 years ago. What? Oh, I already read this, but I don't remember reading.
Yeah, that's one of the nice things about getting older is I have that experience of rereading something for the first time.
Yeah, right? I'm like, what? I read this? Oh, I guess I did read this.
I'll be honest, as I've been catching up on my comics, there have been a couple of times I've intentionally reread the last issue that I had read of the title just so I could figure out where the hell it left off.
Oh, I find myself doing that a lot with certain series like East of West by Hickman, or sometimes I'll reread the previous issue of Lazarus. But that's more because I love Lazarus, and sometimes between issues, it's 6 months before I pick it up again. So I don't mind that. But you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, oh, I got to remember where I was, reset my characters. What time in the timeline is this? Yeah,
I had a TV show that had a year between seasons. So it's like I got to go back and watch an episode or two just to get back into where it was at.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was glad I did. I think I might have been lost otherwise.
Well, and that's the exact point is with so much material coming out, and just like you've spoken in the past, because I don't read this universe, how many different X books, how many different red, blue, green, how many different, you know, which are the young X-Men from the past still here, or do we send them back? You know, oh lordy.
It's hard to keep track, and they make it too hard. We should not have two Icemen and three Beasts running around. But they're gonna do what they're gonna do, and I think some of this is so obviously ill-conceived that the fact that they can't see the problem with it astounds me at times.
Yeah.
But, you know, it makes sense to do, like, multiple X-Men titles because you've got so damn many characters and such, but it gets hard to remember. It's like, I read something, it had some of the X-Men, no, was it Gold, Red, Blue, Uncanny, or you know, Weapon X, or which title was this in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that comes down to, again, the plethora of choice, and it not only gets hard to make the decision, it's hard to remember the distinction between the options.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something where I think Marvel and DC in particular could be publishing as many titles as they're publishing if they positioned them better and they were clearly different things.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, there's so many titles I can go read Batman in, or Superman in, or the X-Men in, or the Avengers in, or Wolverine or somebody, that the lines between the titles blur.
Yep.
And then by the time you get to the collected edition, it's like, well, is it worth getting or not? I don't remember which title this was. That's where I think certain properties, be it like Usagi Yojimbo or something like that, that is just distinct, really get some benefits, because you're not going to confuse them with, you know, all of these other things coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things I think Titan has learned by kind of paring down how many concurrent Doctor Who titles they do.
That makes sense.
Because, I mean, each one is clearly distinct from the others, but they're still all Doctor Who. So there's a similarity of story in some degrees. And again, pulling back on that, I think, is a smart move. You could argue, though, if they were doing more, then by not doing more, they're leaving money on the table. It's just, it's really hard to say what's the right call on that.
Yeah, I think it's a balancing act, right? Because obviously, and it's especially, I think, tough for the license acts, because depending on what their license is, do they pay one flat fee and they can publish as many books as they want, or they have to pay a per book fee, because that will change how many they do. And then obviously you don't want to burn yourself out like Dynamite did with the Green Hornet. Was that the one?
Yeah.
We talked about? Yeah. You don't want to do that where you kind of saturate your audience into not buying anything. And so depending on the contract, depending on what you perceive the overall audience to be, depending on the unique characteristics of that licensed property, because obviously Doctor Who lends itself to having multiple series because it has multiple doctors and it has a long history with, you know, decades of material that you can pull from. So there's a risk and an excitement of, oh, look at all these series we could publish about all these doctors. But the reality is not everyone's a Doctor Who fan. So you have to balance that.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's a matter of how many do you come out with, how many branches of a franchise, and then how quickly do you come out with them?
Mm-hmm.
If it was something where every week I got a doctor,
mm-hmm.
okay, I can handle that. I'll budget, you know, the $3.99 a week. I'm good. Get my Doctor Who fix or something. But when it goes, some weeks I get none, some weeks I get three, well, that's a little uneven.
Yep.
You know, I think that's problematic. Likewise, if I go 1 week with no X-Men title and another week with five, balance this out, guys.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think figuring out what your franchises are and how deep you can dive into them concurrently is something they need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are some franchises I would like for them to go a little bit more output on. But again, they've got to keep the cadence at a good level and not oversaturate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, when they went to two Power Ranger titles and it was almost like an every other week thing, I mean, that works for me. When they go to, you know, 15,000 Batman titles or whatever for a week or something, it's like, it's a little much. I like Batman, but come on. And I think that also shows up when they collect the stuff of, you know, getting two or three, you know, trades kind of just on top of each other, again, for things like Around the Wedding and stuff like that. It can work. It can burn people out. And that's also why when we saw stuff like The Dark Knight's Metal, one of them tended to do much better than the others because, well, they're going to pick and choose.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at the price point of these trades and hardcovers, there's a bit more picking and choosing than just on a week-to-week basis on the comics. So we've got the first volume of one or two things that I think are worth pointing out, specifically jumping down to, I guess, rank 60, where we've got Silencer Volume 1. This is one of the New Age of Hero titles. Volume 1, Code of Silence, trade paperback, 1,394 units. Trying to see if we've got any of the other New Age of Hero titles on the list this time around, because those they made a big to-do about, and then I think kind of, I don't say floundered a little. Let's see, we've got Damage, Out of Control, Volume 1 there, trade paperback, 1,373 units, and I'm not seeing at the moment any of the other ones. A couple of these titles have already ended. These two, I think, are continuing to be published. You know, I look at these sales, upper 1,300s, it's okay. It's not bad. It's not great. This was another one of those lines, though, where the general concept, to me, seemed fundamentally flawed.
Well, and I think that it was obviously they put a decent amount of resources into it, so you can't say it was kind of a quick, cheap shot. But I always wondered if this was more of just an attempt to try and take advantage of an instance when Marvel was a little bit of struggling, and they had made comments about artists not being able to sell books, and so this was a whole focus on quote unquote artists first and all that. But it's so hard to get new superhero characters to stick. I mean, look at how Valiant has struggled with sales. Look at how when Dark Horse has repeatedly tried to start superhero universes, it hasn't worked. And, you know, I just think that the market for superheroes is relatively served by Marvel and DC, and the characters that exist for the people that are willing to buy comics, those characters are enough. Obviously, you have over the last 25 years certain characters that become new and stick, like Venom and things like that. But for the most part, it's really hard to start new superhero sub pockets or sub universes. You know what I mean?
Well, even Venom's what, 30 years old?
Yeah, but I'm just trying to think back to the one that's been successful and stuck that wasn't created in 1965. You know what I mean?
You've got a handful after that, but I'd be hard pressed to name any that weren't created, say, in the 90s.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, any this century.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely, right? I mean, even if you said some of the newer Spider sub-characters like the Gwen State, you know, even those, we don't know if those will be long-term or if those will just be recurring characters, you know what I mean, in the Spider-Verse.
I would argue if they're new characters, they're so derivative. Oh,
touche. That's a very good point. And I don't have enough steeping in the overall spider universe to be able to say that. You obviously have a lot more experience, but I'm just trying to think of what's been quote unquote successful lately. See, like you said, since the 2000, and you're absolutely right. There haven't been any that I can really speak to definitively.
But I think a lot of that is a reflection of a lack of true creativity. I mean, there's good storytelling going on, but Damage is the Hulk. Punisher is a riff on, or Silencer is a Punisher, or a riff on Punisher. There, I can say it that way.
And I will say in the creator's defense, over the last 5 to 10 years, there's been a lot of talk online of, look at what happens when you create for the big two in the long history of the companies taking advantage of creators and with their contract terms. And then there's Image. And if you have a great idea that you think has legs, why in God's name would you create it for Marvel or DC?
Without the push towards Image, that same statement's been going on for even longer than that.
Yeah.
And there have been a couple of big name creators that have effectively gone on record saying they kind of regret having created this character that way.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Timm on Harley Quinn is an example of that. Somewhere I've got a DVD of an interview he did, and it was basically, you know, it was clear. Well, he didn't necessarily say it flat out, but it was clear he felt the amount of money Warner Brothers had made on a character he created for the cartoon versus the financial compensation he got totally out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
He had created one of those few characters, and again, this does go back to the 90s, one of those few breakout characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most... I was going to say, I would say most decades have one, but I don't even think that's true. I would be hard-pressed to name a superhero character created since the turn of the century, year 2000 and forward, that I felt was new, unique, and hit the big time. because most of the things I'm thinking of, Harley Quinn, Venom, or if you wanted to argue Lobo or something, all of them are from like the 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like there hasn't been 2 decades worth of time for this to happen. Now, granted, you get to the current stuff and it's like, is it going to last? Who knows? But so much of what we're seeing on this list in the monthly comics is, I don't want to say a regurgitation of what's gone before, but certainly leans heavily on what's gone before. And again, go with what works. I don't have a problem with that, but it's hard to really be expanding the boundaries of the franchises without actually trying to do that. Flip side, the couple of times I see where they're trying to do that, like with the different forces over in Flash or some other stuff, it's pretty easy to get cynical and say, oh, they're just doing what they did over on Green Lantern with the different Green Lantern cores, or they're just doing this, and be kind of dismissive of it.
Yep.
Maybe I've just gotten old and cynical. That's where you jump in and say you haven't just gotten that way. No. Been old and cynical for a while. What can I say? I'll fess up to that. But when even the events we're getting, you know, the Infinity stuff over at Marvel, harkening back to, again, what happened in the 90s, Doomsday Clock leveraging so heavily on the Watchmen characters, it feels like we're not really moving forward. We're just moving in circles covering the same ground.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was seeing the cover of previews coming up, and it looks like there's a revival of Young Justice coming out.
Ah.
And it's like, okay, that's cool, that's fun. We're going to have a different Robin, different Superboy and such. But we've done Young Justice a time or two already. I enjoyed it. I'm good for another go round. But is it new, or is it just repeating some of the same sort of stuff?
Yeah, it's kind of, recycling the recent material over and over again, right?
Yeah. We got a Marvel Zombies here on the list. I mean, that hit big 20 years ago, I think. Maybe not 20 years ago, maybe it was 10, but still a while ago.
Yeah. Well, with the rate they're putting out stuff, it feels like 20, right? Even if it's 10.
Yeah. Well, that's to me been one of the impacts of the bi-weekly shipping they've been doing. The issues are coming out so fast. Yet because of the length of the stories, it still feels like we only get 3, maybe 4 arcs a year.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think that's to anyone's benefit either. Well, and even some of the characters they're bringing back from Infinity Countdown. Darkhawk, Sleepwalker, you know, mm-hmm. other characters from the 90s and such. Maybe
the 80s. I remember loving the Darkhawk comics when I was getting into comics. I love those comics. But it was just also because I felt like he was a different character, and he was like dark and brooding, and I don't know. It's just, he's definitely one of the characters I remember being a fan of, but I've always liked kind of the marginalized characters, you know?
Yeah, well, and there's nothing wrong with the character, but is it better to bring him back or to do a new character? I don't know.
Yeah, well, and sadly, they may have been beat into submission with what they see is every time we try a new character, nothing lands, so we're just going to recycle these. And sometimes you think, well, is that a defeatist attitude, or is that the reality of they've tried new things, or we can't get anyone to create new things because they know we won't give them total monetary control, you know, compensation for it. So it's like a chicken and an egg thing almost.
Yeah, but then I look at like the Shattered Grid stuff they did with the Power Rangers, where you've got a creative team that respected the material that had gone before, decided to go in some new directions, tell an epic story, you know, and introduce a couple of new characters or whatever, and it was very well received. So I think you can do new things, I think you can do new characters, but you've got to face the fact that the audience is overwhelmed, the audience by and large is jaded. You've got to come out not just with your A game, but man, you've got to knock it so far out of the park that people are just blown away by that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just doing a home run doesn't cut it anymore. And then, you know, when you get lost in the shuffle of so many things coming out, again, we've got enough trades here to fill a list 500 deep. That's a lot of stuff.
Yes, it is.
You know, we've got the same thing on the comics side. And I think so much of it gets lost in the shuffle that it's hard to drum up any serious interest on anything. But, I mean, that's reflected by the fact that they haven't drummed up any serious interest on anything. And the few times they do, it'll often get hit by, you know, again, Doomsday Clock sort of delays or what have you. That doesn't help it any either.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, it's kind of it speaks volumes when a comic that comes out once a month is, you know, obviously Doomsday Clock comes out once every 2 months, but even a comic that comes out once a month now, quote unquote, feels, oh, when was the last time this was published? Did it get published on time? You know what I mean? Like you're worried that it was behind instead of just what the normal publishing cadence is.
If you do a monthly book and you're a week late, one, you could skip over a month, and two, it feels like you haven't come out in forever.
Yeah.
There are some where, you know, I've just finished, you know, reviewing an issue and I'm getting my next shipment from Cowabunga and boom, there's another issue there.
Yep.
It's staggering how fast this stuff can come out. I mean, when they're getting to where they can fill a collection, it seems like every other month, then the collections are almost coming out too fast. But when they come out, some of it almost feels irrelevant to what's going on at that point. Specifically, I just pulled up the solicit for the Nightwing Volume 6 Untouchable trade. Did 2007 units at rank 34. It's collecting 35 through 43. I just reviewed with James 51. And granted, they've got to get the issues out. They've got to get the trade out. The sales have to come out. We got to get them to report on it. So there is that time lag. But I would argue the comic I reviewed and the relevance to the stuff in that trade, not much. And I think it's that transientness, that almost disposableness of story from the creative point of view is part of what's leading to some of these sales being, 2,000 units, that's good. Not great, but it's a copy per store on average thereabouts. It's not bad. But it's hard to build up serious story momentum and reader interest when periodically you just take a sharp left turn and go in a completely different direction.
Absolutely.
But until they have something that is lighting up the sales charts, why wouldn't they change direction? I don't see how they get out of that mode.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's kind of like the inertia that they're stuck in.
Yeah, well, if it's not working, change it. And if you change it, clearly it wasn't working and you've got to now build a new audience.
Yeah, it's tough.
It is, but there's got to be a path to success.
Well, I would ask, or is success what we have and it's just mitigating the slow decline? Like, this is as good as it's going to get. Now, obviously, you can, from that perspective, you can say, well, that defeatist attitude will obviously be self-fulfilling. Or, you know, it is the comics market, we're just managing what we have in the direct market, and the only places the big companies relatively see growth is outside of the direct market.
I think this is not the best it could be. Witness, we've got, like, the Avengers movies doing just gangbusters. There are people interested in good superhero stories.
So interestingly enough, the way that you say that is, it brings me back to the conversations and somewhat of an argument you have with Sam about, are we talking about the same markets? And I almost wonder if the people that watch the movies could care less about comics and they just find that material in those small doses they get once or twice a year. That's all they need. And they could care less about the underlying properties and the underlying stuff.
I think that is the overwhelming majority of that audience.
Mm-hmm.
However, let us suppose hypothetically, using direct mail as a benchmark, you do a direct mail campaign, you hope to get a 1% return.
Mm-hmm.
For people, it's like, wow, this piece of junk mail I got, actually, you know, it looks interesting. I think I'll pick this widget up. So let's say 1% is doable.
Uh-huh.
And that's if you, like, blanket market everybody with no interest. Now, let's say we're taking the people who not went to the theater and watched, one of these Marvel movies, but liked it enough to actually go pick up the DVD, the Blu-ray, the 4K, whatever. Now, if we could get 1% of them to go buy a new Avengers number one or something,
mm-hmm.
it'd sell pretty damn well. If we could get them to go pick up the next Avengers trade, it would top this list by a wide margin.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think we need everybody who watches these Marvel movies to suddenly decide, you know what? I haven't read a book in 30 years. I'm going to start now. No, it's unreasonable. Okay. But if we get those that read, that are willing to try comics or read comics, and we can actually transition them into buying something, and who knows, maybe they actually enjoy it and then buy another something, that right there could bump these sales up a factor of 10 times, if not more.
And you know, what's interesting is thinking about that, you can think about it from, the perspective that I, you know, was representing somewhat of Sam, who says it may be completely different markets that have nothing to do with each other. But from the perspective that you're presenting, it's actually a positive, because like you said, we only need 0.1 of 0.1 of this percent, because the market as it exists is so small that any sort of, if we could tap into any sort of that excitement that people generally have, it would be such a boon, because we're already operating from a point of which these sales are not the hundreds of thousands to millions, you know what I mean? So to move the needle, you don't need as a huge conversion rate as they talk about in advertising, you know what I mean?
Well, you figure your average movie theater holds how many people?
Anywhere from 50 to like 200, you know.
Well, we'll say 200. We're not talking about the little fancy boutique kind of things. I'm talking about a theater that just has chairs, not meals.
Yeah, right.
And that's one showing in that theater is say 200 people, opening night, whatever. And they're going to have more than one showing, and they're going to have more than one theater for it. So if we had just gotten everybody who went to, you know, Avengers Infinity War at one theater on that first weekend for one day to go buy a trade, it would have topped this list.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, not all of them are going to do it. They don't read. They don't have time. They just want to sit and watch a movie for 2 hours. That's cool. But again, now let's not talk the one theater, the one day. Let's talk nationwide, where this thing is doing just gangbusters. And again, start talking, ratcheting it down to the, okay, these people are willing to spend 10, 20 bucks on a trade. This number of them will actually likely to read it. These people may actually go find it. You know, you start ratcheting it down, and still you could get to where you could beat the sales on most of these items absurdly easy.
Mm-hmm.
So the question then is, what is preventing these people from saying, you know what, I enjoyed that movie enough to go, you know, buy it on Blu-ray or whatever, which is more expensive than most of these trades, sometimes by a factor of two, depending if you get the Blu-ray, the 4K, or, you know, the 3D version or whatever. How can we get them to buy the trade, the collected edition, the comic or whatever, to where they can get their fix of these characters they so enjoy on a monthly or bi-weekly basis?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, geez, they don't want to be overwhelmed by material. Because you know what? They do 20 episodes a year of Flash, Arrow, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., etc. You know, that's you know, almost twice a month right there.
Yep.
You know, so they've got the time. I don't think it's a matter of do they have the cash. It's a matter of do they have the incentive.
Yeah.
And I think getting to where return on the investment, you read something, you get a rewarding experience out of it, that's certainly a lot of it. I just think that they're not tapping into that mass audience successfully. And I think whoever can figure out how to do that and get people who are so excited to stand in line for, you know, half a day or whatever to go see this movie to say, you know what, if I had this trade, I could be reading that while I'm in that line. You know, something of that sort, I think could work.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the size of the comic market is so small compared to TV, movie, etc., that again, that conversion rate is so small, it is incredibly doable, particularly given that conversion rate of 1% for a direct mail is a blind one to everybody in like a zip code, regardless if they care at all about that product, versus here we're actually targeting people who've expressed interest in the property in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's doable, we just, nobody's cracked the code as to how to make that happen. And I think whoever does could really do some serious business in the comic market. But I've also thought that for the price of doing a major motion picture or whatever, you could create a comic studio just for R&D purposes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've got to figure the amount of money they spend on an Avengers movie is, you know, substantial compared to how much they spend running all of Marvel Comics.
Absolutely.
And there's, again, no reason they couldn't be getting a similar sort of return on the investment if they could target the audience a bit better. But hadn't happened yet. They've had only about 10 years on the Marvel movies to try this. And again, 0.5% of the original Iron Man film when it was on DVD, if those people would have bought the next Iron Man comic, it would have doubled in sales. And at that point, we were talking, what, a $2.99 comic versus a $15, $20 DVD. The math seems like it could work out.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully somebody will figure that out.
Yeah. Well, we can always hope, right?
It's an exercise to the listeners. How about that?
Yeah.
We got a lot of smart people listening. Somebody will figure it out. So what else did you see on the list that looked interesting?
One of the ones I wanted to talk about was ranked number 8 from Image Comics, Descender Volume 6. So this is selling pretty well for a Volume 6 of a series. This is the series about the robots by Jeff Lemire and Nguyen. And one of the things I was wondering is for these sales, and how I'm not sure how it's doing the single issues, I know that they've announced that it's Descender is ending and they're basically starting a new series called Ascender. And my main question is, and I'm sure they would put it, they would have to put it this way, otherwise it would look bad. Is this because of sales that they're starting over with the new number one and calling it Ascender, or is it really part of the storyline? Because I just wonder, because this sales look pretty good, and it, you know, for a volume 6, and it continues to have reorder activity for some of the other volumes. So I'm just wondering, is it really story driven, or is it, you know, well, our single issues aren't selling well, but when we renumber with a number one and a new title, it'll, you know, start back off and we can start that slow, you know, trundle down the order numbers.
Well, let me phrase the question this way. Is there a difference?
Yeah, touche, touche.
I think if the sales are down, there's a story reason to restart it.
Yeah.
But I honestly have not been following this title, so it's a little hard for me to answer that. I think I read the first issue and said, you know what, this isn't for me.
Mm-hmm.
But if you give me just a second, I will see if I can do a kind of a quick chart on how this is doing. That's provided I can actually spell Descender, which I think I can.
And so, like, the reason I ask is because, you know, Jeff Lemire is a very successful writer. He has a number of series going at all times at all different places, Valiant, Marvel, DC. You know, he's got his own work coming out from even big book publishers, like with Roughneck or with other titles. You know, he's a guy that's definitely has some cachet in the industry, has made it. And so it's not like if he needed to end Descender because it wasn't selling well, he would find it land on his feet. So I just wonder sometimes is if this is just them taking advantage of the fact that new number ones sell better and you kind of reset your clock on a series. You know, you go from selling 4,000 issues to 20,000, which then drops to 10, but you're at 10 for, you know, months and months and months. You know, that kind of thing where they just kind of the whole point of renumbering is to reset your clock.
I think it's kind of a matter of that, because looking at the sales here, it started up near below 70,000.
Uh-huh.
Next issue, it was around 44,000. Then it dropped below 30,000. And then about 5 issues later, it was below 20,000. And then it had been kind of drifting down closer to where it was in July of, we'll say, a little over 11,000 or something. So it had pretty much stabilized in sales over the course of this year.
Uh-huh.
There were a couple of minor spikes here and there. I don't know if they would coincide with the start of a new arc or something like that. But I can totally see where 32 issues in, they're thinking, you know what, we've got a good break. Give it a new starting point and hopefully do, you know, solid sales on a first issue and then watch it drift back down.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, not knowing where they're at in the storyline and such like that, it's hard to tell how much of it is a truly justified new first issue versus a revoluming of opportunity, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes down to how accessible is that first issue of Ascender, and we'll know when it comes out, I guess.
Yeah. Because I can see how you, I mean, from their perspective in trying to market it, they can, you know, the story has kind of been about human society that was decimated by these giant robots that kind of came and decimated a number of planets. And then, but they disappeared. And so the humans' reaction to that was to destroy all artificial life above a certain level. So they sought out robots that could think for themselves, and they were worried that they would go rogue like these giant robots did. And so they kind of persecuted all forms of AI. And I wonder, and then the story of Descender was about one AI that kind of, an old one that had been lost and basically was refound. And then the story of that AI. And I wonder if Ascender is going to be about them learning about who the original giant robots were that destroyed the society and understanding that they were actually the precursors to the entire organized universe kind of thing. You know what I mean? So they're like almost like they, you can look at it both ways. You can look at it like, oh, this was always part of the plan with the story. but it also conveniently will do it when the sales fall apart.
I would not say the sales fell apart on this. I think they could have kept it going as is, but if they've got a good story break and it makes sense to give it a new title and a new kind of entry ramp, at this point I would say why not?
Yeah, and it could also, if they do a couple months but from the last issue and then the new series start, a little bit of break for the artist to get, you know, ahead or caught up kind of thing, you know, if they were having problems getting them out. Because I know Dustin Nguyen does that watercolor style, so there is the option to be a little bit looser on it so that you could get the books out on time kind of thing too.
Yeah, and again, 32 some odd issues in or whatever, I don't see any reason not to consider kind of a retitling at that point.
Well, and also, you know, not only to also be a positive in their aspect, I think they did sell movie rights or TV show rights that, and they're in active development at one of the bigger studios. So, you know, they could have used some of that money to backstop the comics. And obviously, like you said, they started with what, 70,000 in sales. So that's a very, very healthy margin. And a lot of the Image people that run multiple series, they've learned over time is that you bank the money, the early positive money you bank from the early issues, if they're very successful like that, to use to prop up the latter issue so you can get more and more trades out, which kind of feeds back into the cycle.
Yeah. Well, and again, it was below 30,000 by like that third issue, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it frankly looks like a fairly standard sales curve.
Well, and to be honest with you, 30,000, even down into 20,000, as we've learned from McKelvey and the other ones on Wicked and Divine, is a very profitable in the Image model. Because remember, you're not having the cost associated with the Marvel and DC titles, where once they get below, they used to get below 20,000, they get canceled. Now it's below 10, and they still keep some of those series around. But
I would say even at the 11, 12,000, it should be doing well.
Yeah.
So I certainly don't think there was any sales reason to say, oh my God, we've got to rename, renumber. Now, if this were something where it was at issue 8 or something, it'd be like, oh, well, okay, let's take a look.
Yeah.
But the fact that it seems to have leveled out, and odds are with a relaunch, it would probably do closer to like at least the 30,000 and then drift its way back down. I don't think it's a bad move.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, you know, Jeff Lemire is one of the, you know, established creators along the lines of Jason Aaron. And he has lots of, you know, pokers, you know, what's the phrase, a lot of irons in the fire. So it's like, you know, some of the creators, when they're getting series off the ground, if they're successful creators, you know, like the writers won't pay themselves until the book is successful. They'll just make sure the artist has enough and then they take their cut on the back end. And I don't predict that they had any problems with money in this series. But, you know, Jeff Lemire has enough other books going that he could afford to do that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, and that's why a lot of these creators, particularly on the writing side, they'll keep doing stuff for Marvel, DC, or whomever to where they can be letting that pay the rent and the bills while they're going and doing the creator-owned stuff that could be the big meal ticket later.
Yeah, and exactly, and has the potential to have the media payoffs and the other things, and then obviously the long-running trade reimbursement and things like that where you can be like, oh, you know, it's an investment versus like you said, a paycheck to pay the bills.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that was what I was just interested in, because it's obviously still doing well enough in terms of sales wise. And I knew that they had had that change coming. And I was just wondering if we could look at some of the sales trend and see if it was more of a, cause obviously, you know, you see a lot of series where they, you know, when you look at the series, the way it's written, the way the solicits are written, you're like, this is a miniseries, but they don't want to admit it because the sales for miniseries are crap. And so they have to say that it's an ongoing series, but then four issues in, they say, oh, you know, this is a miniseries.
Well, or like the time that Wolverine and the X-Men stopped so it could restart as Wolverine and the X-Men. Same creative team, same title, new number one. That was the only difference. Same ongoing story and such. It's like,
right.
What was the point of that? So there's some truly artificial number ones that happen.
Yeah.
And I don't like those at all. But I also get sometimes you need to do a new number one just to get people paying attention to the title again.
Yep.
But I think if you've got to do that, you should rethink your marketing a little bit, because you should be able to get people to jump on board, you know, kind of midstream.
Mm-hmm.
But the comic reading audience has been trained so much not to do that, predominantly by Marvel and DC, mainly Marvel, that until the audience gets retrained as to any issue you can jump on with, we're going to see first issue sales and then a slide. It's just the way it is.
Yep. That's kind of the reality, I think.
Yeah, it just doesn't need to be. But it also gets reflected on the trade side. and sometimes I think even accentuated on the trade side of that first volume is accessible, the others forget it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we typically see the first volume does best, then the next, then the next. Now, if it's gone long enough or is it still an active title, then you get that V formation where they start ramping up in sales up until the most recent for people who are trying to stay current.
Yeah.
So, for instance, not having looked at the various Saga sales this month, I would hazard to guess that V, the bottom of that is probably around volume 6, maybe 5, if we even have all of them on the list, with 9 and 1 being the two top sellers, or mm-hmm. the two ends of the spectrum, I should say. So give me a sec. I'm going to do a quick filter of the list. I actually think we've got the entire run of Saga. So let's see, from the 9 is the top seller, then 1, then 8, then 2, then 7, then 3, then 4, then 5, then 6. So yeah, 6 is kind of the bottom of that V formation. You tend to see that kind of a trend because when people start, they're going to start at the first volume. When people are trying to stay current, they're going to stay current on the most recent. But there's a little fall off on both sides. At this point, a lot of people are 2-3 volumes behind at least on their reading.
Absolutely.
So, which again makes sense when you've got, you know, 54 issues scattered across 9 trades. It takes a little while to get through that, even if you're highly motivated.
Mm-hmm.
So, anything else look interesting?
I think we covered a lot of material. Nothing that stood out to me. You know, it was interesting to start talking about the first of the, you know, like the Silencer, the first, I think, is this probably the first trade for that to come out for that series? Or
For that series, I'm not sure about the entire New Age of Heroes line.
Okay. But, yeah, I definitely agree with you on that I wasn't expecting, you know, huge sales for that, and they're pretty anemic and for the obvious reasons. So I think that was kind of one of the things that I was looking forward to, is seeing how those did, and they did about what I expected.
Yeah, they did about what I expected. On the trade side, they did well enough that I wouldn't cancel them just outright based on that, saying, oh my God, these are a waste.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure I would also say, oh my God, we've got to keep going with it either.
Yeah, that's a good point.
If I take a quick look on the comic side for Silencer, it's getting now towards the a little under 11,000 range. So I don't think that is enough for me to say, wow, it's got to keep going either. And then if we look at Damage, it's actually doing slightly better. But the two sales curves look almost interchangeable.
Uh-huh.
But I also think that my take on the whole New Age of Heroes stuff just out of the gate was, this is DC's attempt at doing Marvel Comics.
Yeah.
You know, here's the Punisher, here's Ghost Rider, here's the Defenders, here's the Hulk. They were so clearly modeled after Marvel properties that it didn't win any points for me on originality.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not bad books. I'm actually enjoying some of them. Damage, from what I've read, was fun. I'm a little behind on some of the others. Matter of fact, I'm still a little behind on Damage, I believe. But none of them are just, wow, I'm so glad this was published. This is just a breakthrough in publishing or creativity or anything of the sort. Just a couple of more titles. I appreciate them trying to get some new-ish characters out there. I just would have appreciated it more if they'd been a bit more original.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
And I think they would have done better that way. But not the way they went.
Maybe next time, we'll see. Because you'll see something like this again in the future. They keep trying.
Yeah, they do. And I just hope the next wave of new titles like that, either from Marvel or DC, has a couple that look more likely to be successful, just from the outset.
Do you still get them? Do they still get offered by a bundle as a bundle discount? Do you get all of them, or are you picking and choosing now?
I'm getting all of them.
Okay.
I'm still all in at Marvel and DC. Whether that continues, I don't know.
Mm. So here's a question, and something to put a little thought in your head. Are you going to reevaluate at the first of the year, or are you going to, you know, when you hopefully get through all this backlog, or are you just considering now going forward?
I've been considering for a little bit, given how far behind I am on my reading.
Mm-hmm.
I either need to be finding more reading time, or I need to be finding less to read.
Gotcha.
Just the math isn't working out. And part of it is just over at the beginning of the year, I changed where I was allocating some of my time, and the reading kind of got the short end of the stick on that. So I still want to be reading all this stuff. It's just getting back into the rhythm, finding the time, and staying current.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, every time they do something for a few issues and say, oh, it's not working, let's can it, it's like, well, then why did I waste my time on it? Or when they go in this bold new direction for this character, and I'm like, you know, I was happy with what was going on before. What the hell?
Yeah.
You know, it's a little disincentivizing. But
no, absolutely, yeah.
They're going to do what they're going to do. And there are a couple of creative decisions I've seen of late where it's like, this was a bad idea, and within a year or two, you're going to disavow it, and after that, nobody's even going to remember it. So if it's pretty obvious that's the case going in, why are you going this way? You know, and there have been a couple of decisions in the past where I know people got up in arms, like when they did the Superior Spider-Man or whatever. And I'm like, okay, this is a bold new direction, but actually it had some interesting stuff, set up some interesting stuff for later stories that have since panned out. Okay, I'm good with that.
Mm-hmm.
But when there's a little bit of throw the baby out with the bathwater, that gets a little frustrating.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I need to kind of start readjusting where I'm spending my time in terms of reading and how much I get, just to get to where I'm not so colossally behind all the time. We'll see what happens. I still haven't made any firm decisions.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the reality is you know, this is your hobby / entertainment. So, you know, you definitely want to get to a place where if you're going to spend the time and money, you should enjoy it, you know? So
absolutely. And I am enjoying it. It's just I'm spending the money, just not the time. And part of it is there's just so much good stuff to watch on TV and in the movies, yeah, and stuff like that. That's eating a little more time than it had been sometimes.
That makes sense.
So we look at the price points. $16.99 seems to be the predominant one. Over 3/4 of the list is $25 or less, which is good. A couple of high ticket items here and there. Five at $125, two at $150. So I feel we're getting a little bit more of these higher ticket items than we had been at one point in the not too distant past, which isn't a bad thing. But again, I think we talked about this last month. Be nice if they spaced them out a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah.
One that I don't remember if I got or not, I might have, was the Teen Titans Silver Age Omnibus. Big Teen Titans fan here, so if I didn't get it, I need to think about that one. I need to figure out where I have stacked all of the different Omnibus type stuff.
Yeah, and those are the type where you definitely don't want to accidentally reorder one when you have. It's one thing if you accidentally rebuy like a $17.99 trade paperback, but if you rebuy an Omnibus, oof, that's painful.
Yeah, I think I actually did that on one of the Legion ones.
Well, the only way to soothe yourself is say, oh, I'll give it out as a gift, right?
Could be. At some point, I just need to get some more space to where I can get a little more organized, figure out what I've got as surplus, and then figure out what to do with it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it for this month.
Cool.